Hello, everybody. It's Eddie. Glad you are with us today. Got Mr. Mangan with us.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Got Matt with us.
Hello.
And actually, we got Joe with us. And Joe, you're going to be on for the first little bit, and we're going to let you go chase some other monsters.
Gotcha. Sounds good.
How you doing, my man?
I'm doing great. Good to see everybody and hear everybody.
I got a question for you, Joe. You spent 1 week in Minneapolis and 1 week in Chicago. So comparing like frigid cold, what would you say, Joe? Was it Minneapolis or Chicago?
Well, you know, I think that Chicago was colder than Minneapolis, even though they tell me that on Sunday it was colder in Minneapolis than it was in Antarctica over the weekend.
Well, you weren't present, but I'm kind of going to admit to you, Megan and I were laughing at you a little bit.
And you should have. I was yesterday morning about 6 a.m. I was headed to the airport, and I stopped to get some gas in the rental car, and I was struggling to find the little thing that you pop the gas tank deal out with, and I got a little concerned because I thought my ears had frozen and they were going to fall off. It was
That's not really funny, but
it is. It really is for a guy that's not used to all that stuff. But it's all good, man.
That's good. Well, we're glad you're back safe with us. You are going back to Chicago, aren't you?
I'll be going back Friday, and then we'll be back home Saturday evening. So,
just so you know, I'm going to Phoenix.
I know you are. I know. I've talked to Dwayne. I've talked to Kevin. So yeah, I know.
Rub it in, Eddie.
Yeah. Well, all of our students on the call from up north, they don't know what we're talking about because they're like, hey, we live with this all the time, So.
Exactly. They're used to it.
Megan and I are both cold-natured, and we office next to each other, and Susan and Bob and all them are not cold-natured, and they're on a kind of another air conditioner unit. So Megan and I, we'll turn it on up.
We crank it up.
All right. Mr. Matthew, what we got there, my friend?
All right. So we went over this case study last week. We're going to kind of hit it again now that we've got the whole crew here. And it was this address is incorrect. I'll have to replace that. But it was the asset that was on the non-performing tape that came out most recently, and we just kind of went through it. So we're going to kind of hit it up again, and I'll leave it out with Joe. So what do you need to look at first, Joe? What do you want to hit first?
Okay, well, and actually this was from Connie, and I see that Connie's on the phone today, so I'll go ahead and unmute Connie, and then, I'm trying here. Connie, can you hear us?
She has herself muted on her end, so she'll have to unmute herself.
Okay, very good. So, yeah, let's...
Okay. Hey, Connie.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello.
Hey, listen, we want to kind of run back through this with you today now that we've got Eddie and Charles on the line and just kind of walk back through a couple of the things we talked about last week and look at the BPO and so on through Charles's eyes. And so let's kind of go through that, Matt, and we'll look at – what do you want to look at first, Charles? You want to look at the BPO or the offer?
Yeah, let's go to the BPO first.
Okay, very good.
All right, just got to open it up here. So. Sorry, I've got a lot of stuff running, so it's taking a second.
Is it? Okay.
Matt's got 1,800 things open on his laptop.
It's kind of true, but all right. Yep. There we go.
You've got several old men on the phone here, so you're going to have to make that a little... There you go.
Yeah.
It's just taking forever. There we go.
I'm going to go to Walmart and get me some of those giant...
glasses? That's what we're going to get.
I can slide them babies on when I need it.
There you go. Bottle caps, right?
No, I mean like those big frame ones, you know.
Oh yeah, like I know what you're talking about. You get you one of those big big emblems and a big gold chain and put around your neck too. How about that?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's it, Charles. Memphis, and kind of read through. I'll let you kind of take this over and kind of give us your feel on this, Charles.
Yeah. So let me set the framework here. Listen, I don't care who you are, how many times you've been doing it. I've done more of these calls and webinars than I think anybody in the industry by 10 times. And there's just times that, like, somebody will, like, catch me later, and I'm like, they said, well, you were saying this. And I'm like, well, that's not exactly what I was thinking or whatever. And so we just kind of had a couple of people that were, you know, that reached out to Joe at the fact and says, hey, they were asking him stuff, and he was like, so we just thought it was a good way for us to go back and kind of clear up, what we're thinking here, what Joe was thinking, and that kind of thing. So it's just an opportunity for us to, clear it up. So, Connie, feel free to, to kind of weigh in here as far as what you were feeling like some of the concerns were, or, we want to kind of replay this again.
Yeah, thanks. I didn't realize you were going to pull this back up again, but my main thing when I originally asked it was just to kind of walk through and understand how to look at a property, and and Joe's recommendation was really to put it under contract and then order a new BPO because the BPO is a little bit dated, but other than that, I didn't really hear any huge red flags. It sounded like a pretty solid property.
Well, and okay. So that's why we thought we would retalk it, because Charles and I, this is a very unique opinion that we have on this, okay, about BPOs. And specifically, the deal is because of the nature of the comps of these BPOs. And that's why, so Charles, let's go through this BPO and let's figure out at the end of the day, is it really worth ordering a new BPO or is it just another property inspection?
Right. So we've got a BPO, it's less than a year old here. Are some of these fields whited out? Some of these fields I'm not seeing in here, so...
Like, yeah, I see that as well, Charles.
So for some reason this BPO is not reflecting all the fields. But let's go on down and let's look at the comparable sales. Let's look at some comps here. So Connie, again, a BPO is just an opinion of value. And as I say often, is that I can order two, three different BPOs and I'll get two or three different values. Okay, what they're tying them into are comps. Doesn't necessarily mean every agent's going to use every agent's going to use the same comp. They're going to use different comps because, again, it's their opinion. This house here is more comparable than some other house. So, the first thing I'm going to look at is what are they using for comparable listings and comparable sales. I look at, the comps, how close are they in proximity to my house? So these are all pretty relatively close comps. As far as square footage, they're relatively all the same square footage. Where's our comp at? Where's our subject property at, Matt? Usually they put that right there on the top there. Let's see here. Trying to see how many we have in this house here.
Charles, I think this was a 3-1.
3-2.
That's right. Okay, yes, it is.
So we're 3-2 at 2,600 square feet.
All right.
So our home's bigger actually than these comps here are. If you look at, the first two comps here, they sold relatively close to what the sales price was or what the list price was. The third comp there, which is 6-bedroom, 2-bath, much bigger than ours. And so there's a big discrepancy in that value, as far as the list and the sell price. So they may have, they were listing high, shooting for a higher sell there. but it sold for $49.5. And again, these were all average condition. Are these retail comps or REO comps? It doesn't tell us here. Normal sell.
Well, here's what we know. I mean, you know, did they source conventional financing when they bought them?
Right.
I mean.
Well, and see, I'm assuming these are going to be their.
We know the answer to the question. A house sells for $29,000 or $33,000. We don't even need to ask.
Yeah.
It's a cash sale.
So most of these are cash. Look at the listings, Matt or Joe. If you'll scroll down, let's look at the listings.
There you are.
Okay. So see, they've got, I mean, comparable listings here that go anywhere from currently listed from $35,000 to $74,000. Okay. First ones, they're looking at a short sale. So, yeah, they're just trying to lower the value there because it's been the days on market have been $249. So they're just looking at trying to take a short sale to get rid of it. Again, you got values. What they're not offering, I mean, what they're not, they're trying just to get out of these properties. So a lot of them have just reduced their pricing, and especially the first one, which is a short sale, which is going to hurt your comp. So again, that agent's going to come back and say, okay, these values are going to be in the 30s. If you look at these comps, that agent's going to say these value, the value of this property is probably somewhat in the 30s. What is the value? What did they give us for a value on this property? Should be down, Joe. Go down a little bit lower. So 44.5 is what they're saying this property's worth. Do I think this property's worth 44.5? Absolutely not. I think this property's worth more than 44.5. I mean, our house is a bigger, as far as square footage, we got more square footage in the house.
Let's look at there's a couple of things I want to do. Matt, I don't know if we can get to the internet easily and quickly, but let's at least look at, I want to get a sense of the pictures and the street scene.
Yeah, should, if you give me a second, we should be.
While you're doing that, Matt, you know, let's look at the positive features and the negative features here. Okay, so the positive features would be a potential investment property, and negatives would be an REO foreclosures. Why is REO foreclosures a negative? Okay, because that's the realtor's opinion. That's that broker's opinion saying there's a lot of foreclosures, there's a lot of REOs, and that's creating a negative factor on the market. Actually, sometimes that's in our favor, you know, because you can create a cash buyer, but you can also create a seller finance note on this deal. Or you can create it. This is, I think I've seen at the top where this would be, this would rent for about $850, I believe, is what I've seen on the rental on this asset. This would be a great 50-50 asset here to work on the 50-50 model.
Or so, you could sell it to a consumer and owner finance it.
Yep,
exactly. And you could probably sell it for a lot more on an owner finance note.
Well, I mean, we know you could.
So.
And Matt, there was a good picture of that, I think, on that VPO. I think there was a good front shot of that house as well. On down, if you'll scroll down. There you go.
So, Connie. Yeah.
There we go, Matt.
Connie, let me tell you how I see this deal. Okay. I might want an updated picture for the purpose of making sure that a tree hadn't fallen on the house or something like that. Personally, what would an updated BPO tell you?
I think it would only tell you if anything has sold recently.
I mean, what's it going to tell you when you see that? The market's slightly gone up, you know, it's just, you see what I'm saying? It's kind of like, this is kind of the common sense side of the business, okay? And I realize this is not always conventional thinking. This is why we're talking about this again. Okay? It's like, Mangan, if you order another BPO, what are they going to tell you? That another three houses sold in the 30s and the 50s. Right?
Right.
All
right.
For cash. Mangan would tell you that in our shop, if you put that house on the market and let that realtor sell that house for $40,000, Eddie's going to need oxygen.
So that's nice. If you look at this house, I mean, the house next door needs some work, but that's not a bad-looking house right there. And the surrounding homes are nice. It looks like there's a school right there, Matt.
And there's no doubt. Listen, Connie, I'm not saying that we know all the data on crime or whatever. I mean, it doesn't look bad to us, but I'm telling you, you know, do your due diligence. You're just asking us what we do, and you're saying, why would you guys buy it with a stale BPO? We're just saying we bought it with a stale BPO because ordering a new BPO ain't going to prove nothing.
Well, this BPO is less than a year old.
I know, but it's not 3 months old, right? I mean,
it's not one I would order a new BPO on. I mean, we know the market in Memphis, that they're seller of their REOs. We know there's a lot of investment properties there, but we also know that we can sell or finance a house there. Or we know it's got a good rental history. I don't think that's going to change. But I wouldn't have ordered a new BPO. Like Eddie said, I may have ordered a new inspection on it. Just to make sure a tree hadn't fallen on my house or if there's anything, you know, as far as the change in the condition of the exterior of the house. But as far as the new BPO, it's really not going to give me any more updates because the market hasn't increased or decreased that much in Memphis. It really hasn't been a big change in that market.
The point we were trying to make, Connie, is this. We deal in an aspect of real estate that I've called for years unique real estate. Lower price band houses, mobile home and land, and land tracts all fall under this category. You know, if you want to list it with a realtor, you're going to get a wholesale price. If you're willing to go do private treaty and offer financing, you can sell it retail. And obviously, this is what we talk about a lot on the, you know, the performing notes side of the business. But anyway, it's just we totally get this is an arguable subject, and there's no right or wrong answer to it, except we're just saying from Charles and I's perspective, after seeing tens of thousands of these, this is just how we look at it. So Joe says order a new BPO. It's not like that's crazy advice. It's just somebody reached out to Joe and says, well, that's not what I hear Charles and Eddie saying. And we're like, Joe, that's not crazy. But I don't think you look at what we're saying and say that's crazy either, right, Joe?
That's exactly right. And that makes a lot of sense. And that's really what we should be looking at on this asset.
Once again, if the comps were different and they were more, you know, conventionally financeable and all that stuff, where the comps were more sold to a consumer, every one of these comps you're looking at are going to be cash sales to investors. That's just what it's going to be.
Yep.
Does that make sense to you, Connie?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
So anyway, we know that was a little bit random. We put that up there, and we just took a swing at it. You'd be on the call, but see how what happens when you're in the call? We pay attention sometimes.
Good job, guys. Well, I'm gonna bow out and let you guys move on. So,
I'll Joe, talk to we you appreciate
soon.
It.
Yes, sir. Talk to you soon.
Somebody reached out to Joe, and he said, "Hey, let's just put it back up there and talk about it and figure out what it is." So, appreciate your catch on that, and. We'll catch you later.
Okay, sounds good, guys.
Have a fun time in Chicago, Joe.
Don't worry, I will, for sure.
It'll be fun. They're a great group.
Yep, they sure are. Okay, talk to you later.
All right, Mr. Matt, what's next?
All right, next up we've got a question on managing your servicer. And okay. With all disclaimer in advance to everybody on the call, we know that we don't throw any servicers under the bus because It's just Mr. Speed has enough hate email, as he says. So we can keep the name.
Servicers, I do.
Yeah.
Matter of fact.
So just the name of it, if we can kind of keep that to ourselves, and then just go through this as far as the issue and you guys. So Roman, you are self-muted. So if you will unmute yourself.
I don't think Roman can do it. I think. Okay. I believe Jill's going to do it. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, I was thinking somebody else was doing it for Roman.
In fact, if she could raise her hand, we could find her.
Mila.
Oh, yeah, okay, cool.
But I do not see up. I see a hand raised. I'm going to unmute the hand. Go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can. Yeah. How are you?
Oh, doing great. Thank you, guys.
All right. So, you know, kind of the rule here, like if somebody kind of there's a mistake with a vendor, we don't like spotlight their name. We appreciate you working with
us. Yes, I got it.
But we also want to make sure that we address the issue. So basically, as we understand it, you had this loan with a servicer.
Correct.
And you had decided that you were going to move the loan to another servicer.
Yes. Recently boarded the loan. Okay, go ahead.
The original servicer had notified you that they had an agreement with the borrower for a deed in lieu of foreclosure.
No.
Did I misunderstand that part?
I think so. Okay, let me tell you the story, and you may interrupt me and ask additional questions. Here what happened. We were kind of not very pleased with process of transfer the loan to the new servicer from whatever we bought to new servicer. So, and while in the process, we decided to go and proceed with deed in lieu. The same day, actually I remember the dates, on December 9th, we approved the fees for deed in lieu procedure and stuff like that. Later, the same day, myself and my partner, we discussed the stuff, and since that particular servicer were not really what we expected to be, so we decided to try out new ones and decide to cancel everything. Stop any procedure what's been done at this point and move it to another servicer.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. So, because I just want to make sure that we can kind of connect the steps here. Because obviously, what the purpose in doing this really at the end of the day is servicer management, right? And that we all learn from this. Because trust me, Charles has been doing it a long time and he's still learning from it. And me as well. So when you said you decided to stop the process, was it just a phone call? Was there
I'm getting there. Let me explain you. I'm getting there. So since this servicing company was not very responding on the phone calls, it is very hard to get them on the phone. So after discussion with my partner, I tried to reach them out. Of course, they didn't answer. I left a message. Next day, I decide I need to do something more, something bigger than just leave them a message. So I shoot an email, ask, call me as soon as possible. I have an issue going on. So next day, which was December the 9th, they finally called me. And I discuss with them on the phone. I ask them, please stop at this point. Immediately, whatever was done at this point with deed in lieu, and because we want to transfer that loan to a different servicer. And follow this, I send them an email. In my email, I mention only that please proceed with the servicer, and I gave out the name of new servicer and the address. Now, we were gone for vacation for 3-4 weeks, and after we got back, we received a bill for almost $600 from attorney, from the work they done. And I address the issue that I ask to stop everything regarding this process. And they said, attorney said, counselor said, that they received notification from servicer only on the 29th of December.
To stop the deed in lieu process on December 29th?
Yes, but I was on the phone with the guy and with the representative, and on the 11th of December, we agreed we need to stop right away everything. And I said, what I need to do, he said, just shoot me an email. I said, if I send you an email to proceed with transferring services to different company, would it be sufficient? They said, yes. This is what I did, since this is brand new stuff to us, and this is the first time we're doing it. And I just trust the word, and I just shoot with an email asking to transfer the loan to a different servicing company. I didn't mention in this email to stop all other, but from my understanding, since that particular person was assigned to that loan and he was the key point communication regarding this loan, I thought everything has to be done through him, and the phone conversation will be enough.
So have you talked to this person over at the servicing company regarding this yet?
Yes. Yes. Okay. And he asked me just to shoot him an email with a request of transfer. I asked on the phone again, would it be sufficient? He said yes. So I shoot him an email, please proceed with immediate transfer to such and such company.
Okay, but since you've gotten the attorney bill, have you talked with him? Since you've gotten the attorney bill, or have you emailed him to see what his story is?
Yes, it was extremely hard. Actually, I got off the phone with him only like an hour ago. The whole week or 10 days, I tried to contact him. He didn't respond in email. He didn't respond my phone calls. Finally, I tried to call his manager, and finally he called me, the guy, the servicer, not the manager, but the guy we were working with. And he said he will investigate and see what he can do, but later on the road I received a couple of emails from his manager asking me, verify, is this a chain of email you received? You agreed on these fees and that fees? I say yes, but also I send that email with request of transferring the loan. And they said, yes, we see, but it was only transfer on the loan. And of course I responded, that was a, you know, verbal communication, and
that's the old he said.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not in an email format. I mean, you know, you did tell him to transfer the servicing, but you probably should have said, and be sure to close and bill on any type of legal fees or close out this deed in lieu process.
Mila,
let me just tell you, if it were our employee, if they were working for Charles, and this happened to us, Charles would sign off and say, pay the invoice.
I mean, I wouldn't have a lot of choice because, again, it's a he said, she said type situation, and it wasn't clarified in the email. Now, I'm not saying you can't push back to the attorney or have the attorney complete the deed in lieu. So the attorney hadn't drawn up the deed in lieu, correct?
We didn't receive anything from attorney except of the bill, nothing.
Okay, well, wait. This is where we're a little bit confused. How do we know that the borrower has agreed to a deed in lieu?
We don't know this. We don't know anything.
Why are they doing deed in lieu work?
Like I said, I don't know anything. Nobody contact us. We just got the bill, and that's it.
Okay, whoa. Wait a minute.
Did the servicer contact you and said the borrower wants to do a deed in lieu?
No, we decide to proceed with deed in lieu.
Okay, but wait a minute.
What we wanted to do, that they contacted the owner and tried to do deed in lieu.
And did the owner agree to the deed in lieu?
We have no idea, because nobody report us anything at this point.
What would the attorney to do what?
Yeah, what was the attorney supposed to do? That's the question. If the borrower has not agreed to a deed in lieu, there's really not much an attorney can do, because he can't draw up a deed in lieu agreement, because the borrower has not agreed to sign that.
They're supposed to contact the borrower.
Well,
yeah.
Okay, so let me go back. On the attorney bill, how did he itemize the $600? What was on the attorney bill for $600?
Actually, it has an attachment. I believe $450 was to review the title, and additionally $125 was kind of paperwork for the period of 9th of December up to 29th of December. That's it.
Okay. Yeah, don't ever start a deed in lieu. Have an attorney start a deed in lieu process if the borrower has not agreed to sign a deed in lieu. Again, as far as the bill goes, the communication wasn't clear, close and bill to the servicer, and that's probably what they're going
to do. Charles, I want you to expound on that, because I'm not sure that everybody would be totally clear about what you mean by that expression.
Close and bill?
Yep.
So anytime I transfer a loan, or transfer servicing on a loan, when I sell it, I notify my servicer to close and bill. And what that means is that they contact you. If there's any type of litigation, legal work on the account in process, they contact that attorney and tell him to close the account and bill it. Unless it's transferred, now that's not saying the new buyer can't reach out and have it transferred to them. But the day I notify them is the day I tell them to close and bill, and that cutoff is that day. They don't bill me anything after that day. They close out the legal action that they're working on for me.
That was my understanding of what we did with the representative. But
well,
yes,
but
I understand.
Told,
I didn't follow.
Well,
with
you
an
told
email.
Him to transfer. You told him to transfer the servicing.
In
so,
the email, but on the conversation,
yeah.
Yes, I said stop
okay.
All the procedure at this point.
And
well,
he's probably talking to 30, 40 people a day, if not more. And, you know, that's why you got to outline that, because what he may have forgotten that conversation. And, you know, when you just told him to transfer the servicing, he may have thought you were going to continue to use that attorney. You know,
I was specific, but again, I understand your point. The conversation versus email or notification.
Yeah, you just need to clarify it. But now, if you got a $600 bill you need to pay, you need to talk to the attorney and at least get that title work. You paid for that.
Yeah, for the bill, what do you get? Because Charles and I can't figure out what the heck it is you paid for.
I mean, if you're paying $400 to review a title,
it was only review the title. That's it.
Well, then where's the title review?
Yeah, Mr. tell him you want to see
good
the
question.
Title review.
I mean, did you read it and not write anything? You just had a thought about it, Mr. Attorney, or what's up?
It looks like it. They just read it and that's it, because we didn't receive any report, nothing from them,
well,
just a bill.
Were you paying them for an opinion, Mr. Attorney? Was I paying you for an opinion? Where's your opinion?
Yeah.
In other words, we're just saying you don't
get
go,
something back.
You don't go bill and not have any evidence of what did they think? Is it, you know? I mean, I've never seen a perfect title. Right? You've heard me say that. Every title review I've ever seen has something on it. So surely to God they'd have to have an opinion about something. I want you to listen, I get the fact they screwed up. Okay? And I know it's frustrating they screwed up, but we, you guys sent it in, and we thought it was a very good case study for a couple of reasons. Okay? It seems like maybe you put the cart in front of the horse in that you ask for attorney work for a deed in lieu when the borrower had never agreed to it. Okay? I don't need to call the attorney up until I know I got to deal with the borrower. Secondly, I don't share the same opinion as the servicer that we're not going to say who. I don't share the same opinion that they need to send it to an attorney for a $425 title review that you don't have.
This was one of their attorneys, correct?
Yes.
It's okay. You know what the deal is, Mangan. It's one of these lock-in-the-box foreclosure deals.
Well, I'd push back. I'd push back to see what I'm getting for $600. I mean, I would make them provide you something if they're going to invoice you $600. I'd make sure they would provide you with something.
Yes, we will try.
I mean, you can push back to the attorney and say, hey, look, I notified them on, you know, December the 9th or 11th, whatever day it was. I notified them December 11th to stop all, to stop this transaction, tell them who you spoke with. I don't know if they'll adjust the bill. It's not likely because basically
I already sent them that kind of email. The response was that they received notification from that servicing company only on the December 29th.
Okay. Well, so they're sticking to it. So I just push back and ask them, what do I get for $600? I don't want a bill that says you looked at the title. What did the title say? I want to see the title. Let me see the search that you reviewed. And push back and make that attorney give you
something
for $600.
What's your opinion based on the review? If you're billing me, what's the deal?
Okay, I got it.
Now, let me tell you two or three industry standard things. Okay, I just want to make sure that we circle back. And then we're going to talk about a little bit of just a strategy, okay? Listen, Charles and I have not seen the title searched. We've not. There's lots of things that we haven't done, okay? And I'm saying to you that, you know, we can't generally understand why they need an attorney to review a title search, okay? That doesn't quite make sense to us. You understand that you should not have initiated the work at this point until you had the borrower agreeing to sign a deed in lieu, right? So you kind of hired the lawyer to draw the documents when the buyer hadn't agreed to come to the table yet, okay? But more importantly, it is not industry standard. From what we're hearing from you, it's not industry standard that you, an attorney, would charge you that kind of money to review a title search. So we're just not clear about what it is, but I will tell you what is an industry standard. Whatever the heck they reviewed, they'd send you some correspondence and say, here's my opinion on based what we sent, because we sent you a bill. At least let me have something of value for it. So in hindsight 2020, we would not have hired the attorney because the borrower hadn't agreed to sell yet. Okay? I really wish, hindsight 2020, we could have discussed what you were employing the attorney for on one of the webinars before you did it. And we appreciate you're willing to come in here and lay this out. Because you're going to save a lot of other students, not just you in the future, but, Miley, you're going to save a lot of students money because, you know, these are just things that are a great example that we really like to be able to review. Now, let's talk about a strategy. Don't tell them this is your first deal because all they're going to do is make that the excuse. In other words, their whole negotiation is going to be, well, you just didn't know what you were doing, and you were telling us to do things, and they're going to act like it was all industry standard, and it's just this how it works every time. Well, Charles and I are going, well, we may not have all the information. That's a fact. There may be details about it that are done, but just as a negotiation strategy, I would not tell them that that was your first time. Because, you know, they're going to use it against you. They're going to try to negotiate against that. So, I don't know, Charles. Have you transferred the servicing?
Yes, we had. On the 29th of December, the transfer was completed to a different company.
Well, so the attorney has sent you an invoice.
Yes.
I'd say that, you know, if you've transferred the service and the attorney sent you an invoice, they need to negotiate the fee.
Have your new servicer reach out to the borrower to see if they will do a deed in lieu. Go ahead and have the new servicer reach out to that borrower and then just see if they'll do the deed in lieu, you know, real quick here.
Yeah, this is what we're trying to do now.
Okay, and then you know, call the assets attorney. Say, hey, look, you know, is this $600 including the preparation of the deed in lieu, which it's not, but just push it back to them like that. And I can't believe it took $600 just to review a title, and I don't have anything to show for it. And you can still push back to the attorney and see if they're going to, you know, at least have them provide something for that $600. But the main key is always keep a paper trail. Send emails and make sure it's all in writing. That's just the main thing. And you got to be specific. You can't just say transfer the servicing and expect them to close and bill. Because a lot of times they don't close and bill because they're dealing with hundreds of assets and files every day. So, you know, you've got to be clear in your communication, unfortunately.
All right.
But it's definitely a good question.
It's not a shocker that this lit up the boards. So let's go back, Matt, and here and see what we've got.
Sounds like the transfer was completed on the same day that the attorney bill was closed, so the original servicer took way too long to do that. Yeah, and, you know, and again, there's probably a lot going on during the holidays, but that's probably what they did the day that the loan transferred. They closed it out of their system, and it would probably generate an email to the attorney to close out the file. So they never let the attorney know until the day it transferred.
Right. Could servicer not have informed her that they should have only ordered, you know, I mean, there's some, listen, we think there's possibly some things that, you know, we would have liked to seen the servicer have done that isn't not what went down. So the answer is, Stu asked, well, shouldn't the servicer have let her know that they really didn't need to go get the attorney in the loop on the deed in lieu unless the borrower had agreed to it. But, you know, I don't know, you know, once again, I don't know what the servicer knew and didn't know, and maybe the servicer thought that she was having direct conversations with the borrower. You know, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
Charles Sullivan says, yeah, the attorney should have their work product. We got that part. They're quick to send the invoice, but not so quick to send the real stuff. So
exactly.
Anyway, we appreciate everybody's comments here. And Myla, I'm sorry. I don't think it's the end of the world that you got overcharged a little bit here because you know, unfortunately, in our business, there's a little bit of that. Sometimes good, sometimes it's bad for us. I know it's frustrating, and we're not belittling that at all. I think the answer is just, and the life experience is, you just know you got to be very clear and lay out exactly what you're telling them to do. I don't think that you need to pay the invoice for no work product. And secondly, I think you got some shot of kind of negotiating the invoice.
We'll try to do it. We'll try to negotiate.
Sorry for your frustration.
Oh, well, we have to deal with it.
Yeah. All right, Ms. Myla, let us know.
Okay, we will.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
So, I don't know if you want to get off into this on this one. We still have another question, but what's kind of the process of whenever you're negotiating for getting the actual deed in lieu? How does that look when you're contacting the borrower, and then when you go to contact the servicer and say, hey, look, I've got this information? I mean, is it something you put in writing or have the borrower kind of make note on, or do you, I mean, how does that process look?
Well, I typically reach out to the borrower to see if the borrower is willing to sign a deed in lieu. Generally, they'll either say yes or they'll offer them like a cash for keys to sign the deed in lieu. Once they, if the borrower agrees to that and they hire the attorney or employ the attorney, the first thing the attorney is going to do is he's going to pull title, and he's going to review that title to make sure there's not any liens or anything that would cloud that title before he prepares the deed in lieu. And then once they provide him the information with the borrower, they'll prepare the deed in lieu. They'll send a mobile notary out to have the deed in lieu signed, or an agent that they choose to go out to the house and have the deed in lieu executed, and then they return the deed to the attorney's office. But the first thing is, they never got a confirmation from the borrower that they would sign it. So, I mean, or that they would, execute a deed in lieu. So when they notify the attorney, he just assumed that they probably had the borrower's agreement to sign the deed in lieu. So the first thing he did was order the title. So I'm sure the $600 included the title search and reviewing the title, which is still steep. Yeah,
Is Pro Title, would they be cheaper than that?
They might be a little cheaper than that, Eddie. So anyways, so that's pretty much the process. So before you start a deed in lieu, just make sure the borrower agrees to sign.
And to be clear about this, you know, Myla's money that she's spending here, we're not belittling that. Believe me, Charles and I have been there many times. And we're just kind of saying, at the end of the day, it's kind of like, I think you can waller around with them and negotiate a little bit. You know, and I don't think they're going to reduce it to zero, but I think you can probably wall around with them and get a little something done.
Right. So. Definitely a good case study question, though.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Do you want to go to Dennis's question?
Yeah.
All right, Dennis, you are unmuted.
Okay. Hey, guys. How are you?
Hello, Dennis. You might turn your volume up there just a little bit, my friend. How you doing?
All right. Let me see what I can do here. Give me 1 second.
Oh, yeah. You seem like you're going the right direction there, brother.
Okay. I just have this collateral file, and I don't know. I bought a few notes, and we've sold a couple of them and so on, but I'm still not as comfortable as I'd like to be with reviewing the file and so on, so that's why I sent this in. I'd spoken to a friend of my real estate partner, and who's an attorney and does a lot of foreclosures, and you know, he was very hesitant about the paperwork on this and so on.
This is a non-performing note.
Yeah, non-performing note, abandoned property, dilapidated, the owner, the borrower is still local, but. You know, I think they bought it as an investment property and so on. But the idea of the lost note affidavit we run into all the time, and what makes a good lost note affidavit, and what makes a weak one? That's kind of my biggest question. And what other items should we have in the collateral file? You know, one of the things he pointed out, there's nothing about the borrower at all. There's no payment history. There's no nothing.
Well, first of all, it's non-performing notes, so there's probably not going to be a payment history. Is this a land contract, Dennis, or is this a note mortgage?
No, this is a standard mortgage.
It's note mortgage. What it would be, because it's a lost note affidavit. So let's go back. So he's saying he feels like the documentation is weak because there's not enough information in the file.
So we don't even have the original lost note affidavit. It's a copy of that.
Okay. So, you know, I had a servicer tell someone the other day, he said, you know, you need to get away from the lost note affidavits because, you know, we're seeing more and more pushback. I have yet to see pushback, okay? I mean, I hear this every day. Well, attorney said I may get some pushback on this. I have yet to get any pushback on any lost notes on foreclosures. Now then, I have had an attorney say where I had to send a representative in to testify in court that note was actually lost. You know, if they didn't take the lost note affidavit, then I had to go have a representative appear in court that had a power of attorney speak on my behalf saying, yes, I am the note holder. Yes, I purchased this note. The note was lost. That is a valid lost note affidavit. But the reality of it is that note is still a valid note, whether it's lost or whether it's the original. So you got an old house that's dilapidated. You know, the likelihood that borrower coming back is probably slim to none. I mean, I just don't think that borrower is going to come back.
One of the things he was saying, too, well, he's, you know, familiar with the judges and so on here in Broward County. He says, well, you know, if I went to this judge, you know, he'd just sign it and no big thing. But other judges can be more of a pain and may, even though it may be uncontested, you know, the judge may say, where's your documentation? I mean, this is all you got? You know, that type of thing.
And again, I don't know, you know, I mean, you've got a copy of the note. And the lost note affidavit. My original notes, I don't send my original notes to the judge. They work off a copy. I mean, you got a copy of this note and a copy of the lost note affidavit. Again, the judge could push it back. I'm not saying he couldn't. You know, one thing you could look at is trying to reach out and contact the borrower here or the owner of this property.
Well, yeah, that is a possibility in this case, so we are doing that a little bit. But as far as what you were saying earlier, as far as finding someone to testify, who would be testifying in this? The original New Century Mortgage is out of business, according to the attorney there.
No, you would have to testify saying that you are the original note holder.
Not the original, but you are the
current note holder, okay, that you purchased this note that was originated by New Century. It is a valid lien. You have not sold this note to anybody else, and that you are the owner of that note. And you testify, and the judge will sign off on it. Okay. What they don't want to do is three or four people running around here with a lost note affidavit on the same property trying to sell the notes or foreclose on them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So basically what you're testifying is that you purchased the note and that you are the current note holder of this property and that it has not been assigned or sold to anyone else is basically what the affidavit or what you're testifying for.
Well, I have another property, a different property where I have it with some attorneys, and that's actually what they're doing. They're saying that we're doing a new, just exactly what you said, really. However, how do I go to testify through the entire chain? You know, I've got copies.
You got copies, and you're not testifying through the chain. You're testifying that you are the current note holder, and that you have not assigned or transferred this note to anyone else.
And Dennis,
you're testifying.
Dennis, I'm going to tell you this, okay? I have attorneys that I have attorneys that do legal work for us, and they do different things, but I hire attorneys for different things. And this attorney that you're talking to that you know, he might not be the right guy to go drive this foreclosure to conclusion.
Right.
You remember on the call about a month ago, I had this lady attorney on there that used to run the foreclosure, all the legal process for Ocwen?
Okay, I don't think I remember that.
They say all this crap a million times, and I guarantee you she can find you a lawyer to foreclose.
Yeah.
And I hear you, brother. I hear you. We hear all this stuff all the time, and, oh, it's this and it's that and it's whatever. One lawyer seemingly can take it through, and it's like never hits a whistle. The other one's like, if they get it in their mind, the judge is going to have a problem. Guess what?
Mm-hmm.
They seem to have a problem.
Yeah. He does a lot of work for the defendants, so he knows how to, you know, when they want to fight it, you know, he can tie them up pretty good and is pretty successful at it. So maybe that's why he's so aware.
Those lawyers suck as foreclosure attorneys.
What's that? I'm sorry.
My personal opinion is these defense lawyers, I've not had great luck with hiring them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and they'll start telling you all that kind of stuff. Listen, I say it all the time. Can you take Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, who doesn't really want to foreclose, and can you punch them around and get them to, you know, stop a foreclosure action? Yeah, because they don't want to fight back. That don't mean anything. You know, I can sue somebody that I'm going to be a bully and they're not willing to fight back, and that I can win. That doesn't mean that if I sued Charles Mangan, I wouldn't have a fight from hell.
So what you're saying is this paperwork looks okay to you. Maybe not great, but okay.
No, you've got a good lost note affidavit there. You've got the note. I've had people walk in a courtroom before they didn't even have a copy of the note, which I don't recommend. But you got a good copy of the note. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with it. And again, like Eddie said, you might not have the right attorney. Is he a real estate attorney?
I wasn't even really considering using him. I might, because, you know, we were just passing it by him because it came up and my partner was involved, and, you know, so we just kind of sat down with him for 15 minutes, and he had reviewed the documentation.
We are in a specialized field.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what I would tell you is that my general experience with hiring a bunch of lawyers that do gin mill foreclosure work or defense work, you know, I will say one thing about your attorney, and I'm kind of picking on him just a little bit, okay? So we're just going to have a little fun with this.
Okay? No problem.
3 years ago, he'd have said, there ain't no way you can foreclose because you ain't got the original note. Now, after these borrower defense attorneys that got their butt handed to them to find out that because they lost the note, it didn't extinguish the debt. Now they're at least arguing about whether maybe a lost note affidavit is good or not. 3 years ago, they wasn't arguing that worthy Mangan.
No, not at all.
They were like, oh, my God, you're screwed. You can't foreclose. And I'm like, bull snot.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things that would be interesting then is to see, you know, if this is okay, you know, this is, you know, if you put this on a scale of 1 to 10, I don't know where this would fall, but let's say it falls at a 7 in quality, I would like to see why would 1 be a 3 or a 4, you know what I'm saying, or a 2. You follow what I'm saying? Like, where are the problems that I should be looking for? If this is okay, then how bad does it have to get before I should be concerned? You follow me? Does that make sense?
I'm sorry.
You're just saying, you're asking for some kind of a number system of the likelihood you can foreclose?
No, what I'm saying is just that I would like to go through a few more of these, you know, on the calls possibly and see where you point out to say, hey, I see a problem here, or I see a problem there, or that sort of thing. Maybe I've just been slow to pick up on it.
It's all case studies. It's just like it's a student-driven deal. You guys put case studies up here, and we're happy to do them. We're not going to call and beg students to do it. We're just saying you guys invested a heck of a lot of money in this business, training and investing in notes. And if I were doing it, I'd be throwing case studies up there on a regular basis.
Good. Then I'm going to do that more. I appreciate that.
You know, and a lot of your partners on this call, you know, we're kind of sitting back there going, well, I don't know. Well, I mean, we're giving you due diligence files every day, and you're dealing with issues every day, and that's what we're trying to do. We genuinely want to kind of flesh out these issues, and you ask a very fair question. Now, Matt, Blanca is, do you have her contact information? You can move over into the thing if people want to download it, because I know that now all of a sudden I lit up the boards with she, but I didn't say it was Blanca.
Yeah. Yeah, let me look real quick.
Blanca Greenberg is who we're talking about. Yeah. And she was chief counsel for Aquan, and I got to know her, and I talked about a lot of these issues. Dennis, you ask a really fair question. And I laugh. This goes back to my saying, you know, and I'm sure that your attorney guy you talk to is a sharp guy. I'm not saying he's not sharp. Well, let's just say he's a lawyer and I'm not. So we got something there. But the reality is these subjective opinions of stuff, and you got Charles Mangan that ran the finance department with HomeVestors and initiated thousands of foreclosures in 2008 with problematic issues that they had there. You know, he was at American Home. You know, I mean, he's been way down the road with companies that did, you know, tens of thousands of foreclosures a year. And when you really get down to it, when Charles Mangan says he hasn't seen a case, that's a pretty measurable number, because they see a lot of deals go.
Okay, so
what we find is attorney management, and just what you heard Myla talking about earlier, where the lawyer sends her a bill, and you know she don't really know what he did. He never really gave her. I mean, attorney management is just as critical as servicer management, or you know, boots on the ground contractor management. And there's something about dealing with attorneys that we've discovered that people just assume that the attorney says it's true. But we love people bringing up stuff like that, where it's like attorney management is a really big deal.
I hear a lot of background noise there.
Sorry about that, guys.
Isn't that what Rush Limbaugh does? He crinkles the papers.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you, Dennis? And let me just tell you something. You ask a very fair question, and we are absolutely, you know, we like, you know, banging through this stuff a lot. And you know the answer at the end of the day is we're not attorneys, and we're not capable of rendering legal opinion and all that kind of stuff, right?
Right, yeah.
That goes without saying.
So I'm just going to do that, though. I'm going to throw some more case studies there when I see these papers. One of the other issues, which I don't want to extend the call too much, but is sometimes when you're looking at a note, I'll have to bring you an example of it, but when the balance is – no, I'll bring it up on a different call.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Dennis.
Andrew here. Dennis, by the way, thank you for doing that. I thought it was really, really good topic.
We do have a hand up. Well, I'm still pulling that up, but we have a hand up if you want to.
Okay.
Okay, so give me just a second. Kenneth, you have yourself muted if you want to unmute yourself and go ahead.
Kenneth, are you with us?
Doesn't sound like it.
Do you hear me?
Right? Hey, Kenneth, what's up, brother?
Nothing much. I hit by accident while I'm driving.
What's up?
I'm driving and I'm listening, and I hit it by accident.
Okay, no worries. We'll catch you later.
Yes. How y'all doing?
Doing great.
I love the piece you sent out that was goals for 2016.
Thank you. We've had a lot of comments about that.
Oh, yes.
Yep. We actually spent quite a bit of time trying to make sure to get everybody. Megan, what did you say?
I said everybody needs to diversify in the note business.
Good. That's good advice.
Definitely.
All right, Mr. Matt, is that it? Are we going to clean up some questions? We got some more. What are we going to do here?
Well, I was trying to find the Blanca contact, but
all right. Well, let me cover some questions here while you do that.
Okay. Thanks.
Scott's asking about more sources to sell notes. I don't know, Scott, we've only been doing this 30-something years, and, you know, we do the best we can, you know. We think we're identifying the best notes in the market that are really value by notes. I know that other people that are selling notes in the market that we don't necessarily spotlight, and the reason we don't is we think there's probably some flaws in the note or the delivery of the notes that are not something that we do. So we're always trying to be open-minded. We just feel like we're giving good resources. So, I mean, it's America. You can go chase them, go do whatever you want to, but we feel fairly confident about what we're delivering is good inventory that is correctly priced. Roman's talking about a bigger issue that goes to foreclosure, and Roman, once again, it goes back to the thing. Depends on what lawyer you hire. Some lawyers will tell you, oh, it's this and it's that and whatever, and other lawyers just, you know, and I'm not saying the lawyers are shortcutting, I'm just saying that, you know, some lawyers will get you off a traffic ticket and some lawyers will, you know, get you out of a murder trial. Somebody suggested calling the county clerk. I don't know that I would say that that's been my best experience.
Call the county clerk. To locate.
Yeah, there's Blanca's information.
Oh, yeah.
So Blanca was on the call. Matt, was that 1st of December?
The 15th of December.
And you can go back and listen to that archive, and also there is her contact information. Matt, I know we're going to have her on some more calls this year. So she was head counsel for Ocwen. She used to basically manage attorneys all over the country that had all kind of ideas. It's quite an interesting lady. So, I don't know if you can make that a handout, or is that on the membership site, Matt, do you know?
It's on the member site under the December 15th call webinars. You can download the syllabus and it's on there.
Okay.
But I can basically make this. You give me a second. I can make it a handout and put it on the webinar real quick. So give me just a second.
All right. Well, we'll do that, and then you guys, if you want Blanca's information, you can do that. Why do attorneys and accountants have so many different opinions, Mangan?
Don't ask me.
Huh?
Don't ask me. Why do they have so many? I don't know. Do you know, Eddie?
I don't know. They don't. It sure is a variance in what they tell you. Worse than attorneys is accountants.
I might argue a little bit there with you, but you know, I've had more problems with attorneys than I have accountants.
The accounting business is the most black and white gray business I've ever seen.
Black, white, and gray. Well, again. My experience has been with the attorneys, and if you don't have a good attorney, or you know, can't trust the attorney, you need to move on to the next one.
You know what? I've never heard an attorney call me and say,
"What?
I screwed up."
And your bill's in the mail.
Now I've heard him say that.
Yeah.
But I've never heard a cop say, you know what, I really screwed this up. I botched this up completely. I can't.
No, it's always going to be your fault. So it's going to be something we did.
Well, it's just this, and it's just like, you know, and it's like, so listen, how do we run, Bruce said, or Mark Bruce said that's because they're just practicing law. That's a little bit
exactly, Mark.
Listen, these are topics that we want to beat up on the call. And if you give us a lead time ahead of time, and we need to get somebody like Blanca that's on the call and can help sift through some of this stuff, if you prepare and give us enough lead time and do a real case study so that, you know, it's not somebody just randomly putting it up. And Dennis, you did a great job of that, by the way, and we didn't invite Blanca on the call today, but you did do a great job of kind of presenting your information. Then we'll deal with it accordingly.
That handout is up, by the way.
Sandra asked about, is there a criteria for finding attorneys? And yes, there are resources of attorneys that are on the membership site, absolutely. And if you guys will be very active in communicating on the forum and like the little map that we have, then it helps us find vendors across the country. So we've given you a very solid list of attorneys, and as you get experience with them, then we have a map on there that you can update. So it's pretty critical. All right. We good?
So everybody, before we jump off real quick, and if you need it, just email me, matt@noteschool.com, and I'll send it to you. But that Blanca handout with their contact is in the handouts right now. So you can download it right now before we log off, or I'll send it to you. Either way. But other than that, we are good.
Yep. I'm sorry, had a little cough and attack there.
No, I think we're good.
All right, you guys have a great day. Great stuff today. Let's just keep mashing on it. You guys, we're trying to paint you a clear picture of good case study stuff that's really helpful on these calls, not just for you, but for everybody. So, good example of that today. Really appreciate everybody's submissions and participation. Y'all have a good day.
Have a great one.